Welcome to the podcast. Today we're talking about marketing, but cybersecurity product marketing. We've got Justin Copeland from Praetorian. Here he is. He's got about 15, 16 years of marketing experience. 12 of those years he spent in the cybersecurity industry. He's worked for Praetorian, where he's at right now. He's also worked for Blackpoint Cyber, Coalfire, Cyderus, I'm not saying that right, forgive me, and Fishnet Security. Really cool conversation about marketing, what's working, what's not working, impacts of AI, all that good stuff. And we also talk a little bit about recruiting. So I hope you guys enjoy. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast, Justin Copeland. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing good. Excited to have you. Today, we're talking about marketing, all things marketing. It's good because Justin happens to be in the cybersecurity space ever since 2015. And you've been focused on in cybersecurity. Right now, you're at Praetorian. So they're doing offensive security. We'll talk about them. But before we dive in, let's do the warm-up questions. What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite band?
Oh, man, a warm-up question. That's probably going to be my hardest question, to be quite honest. So favorite band, I'll start with that. You know what I'm getting into, though? I'm really getting into, like, classic rock lately.
Okay.
Creedence, the Eagles, the classics.
Love it.
I'm a piano player all my life, and so I enjoy a good Elton John. I'm not ashamed of it, you know? So I enjoy some of the, you know, the Billy Joels, the Elton Johns, that kind of stuff. So that's me. Movie wise.
What's the movie about Elton John? He had a good, that was a good movie.
Yeah, Rocket Man. It was kind of depressing, but it was also, I mean, it was real, you know?
It was, man. It was real. It's kind of like the other one about the guy from Queen. They've made some good movies about these guys.
Yeah. Movie-wise, seems like anymore, the movies I get to go to are taking my daughter. So, literally the last movie I saw, what was it, a couple weeks ago, with Inside Out. I mean, that's like the little animated Pixar thing. That's my world anymore. But no, oh, man, that's a tough one. I go with the classics. If I'm feeling dumb, I go Dumb and Dumber. I go Napoleon Dynamite. That's my style. I'm not really intelligent in the movies.
I love Napoleon Dynamite.
There's me and my nephews, we quote Napoleon quite often amongst each other. So
there's a, you know, when the guy's sitting there at the computer, it's like Napoleon's brother or cousin, like, or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's chatting on the internet with some girl. There's some recruiting memes that throw him in. Cause it's like a recruiter just messaged me on LinkedIn. Things must be getting serious. What would be my favorite movie if it was based on just kids alone? Probably Polar Express. My kids love that movie.
Really?
Polar Express. Yeah. They want to, if you ask them, what do you guys want to watch? Polar Express. Every time. I mean,
really?
Yeah. We've seen it 50 times. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
It's a long one too. It'll hold their attention for a long time.
Right.
Now, how old are your kids?
I've got two girls. They're 9 and 12, I guess, now.
Was it dance or cheer they were into?
Our world is dance, competitive dance. And I don't know how we got sucked into that world, to be quite honest with you. So, yeah, we're just coming off of our dance nationals, traveled down to Florida. We spent 2 weeks in Florida. Sounds fantastic, but realistically, I was sitting in a convention center for 2 weeks. Didn't see the light of day. So, you know, that's the world we live in. And I used to have hobbies. I used to play golf and do all that fun stuff. And now I just drive them to and from dance classes and, you know, do the parent thing.
Sounds like my future because my daughter's in dance. Those dance companies, man, they're really good at debiting money out of your account. They're so good.
Yeah, it's a second mortgage. That's for sure.
My daughter's in swim right now too. We're going to swim meets, and she's actually an athlete, man. So I feel like I'm gonna have more fun cut out for me taking her places. Because whenever they're good at stuff, you have to go. You know,
That's exactly right. I tell my girls, I'm like, you know, if you don't have fun at this, I don't want to push it for multiple reasons, obviously. Oh, but I'm like, financially, if you don't have fun at this, I'm going to go buy a beach house with this money. Like, you know, but I think swim and dance are very similar into where, as a parent, you watch them for their 2 or 3 minutes and then you sit there for 2 hours until they go again. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait at these meets and stuff.
Oh, but, don't even get me started. I wish they'd let the 6-year-olds, I wish they'd just let them go first, get all their stuff out of the way so we can go home.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, it's awful. I don't know how they come up with the schedule for that. So, I'd love to learn more about your story. How did you get into marketing? And then at what point did you decide to specialize in the cybersecurity industry?
Yeah, I kind of stumbled on it. I would say my love of marketing started all the way back in high school. I had a fantastic marketing teacher in high school, and she really turned me on to the love of marketing. And I participated in all of the clubs, the DECAs and stuff back in the day, majored in it then in college, and really thought that I would combine that with my love of music and wanted to go more into the music business side of things. I started down that path and quickly realized that is not really what I wanted to do. And so I actually just stumbled. Back in the day, it was like, a career builder or something like that, just an ad. And I got the job as kind of entry-level marketing for a cybersecurity company. At the time, it was called Fishnet Security. Ended up having rapid growth. They were the largest privately held security company in the U.S. Didn't know it at the time. And that really set me up for success. We had this rapid growth. We combined with a company called Accuvant. And then today, that company that's combined is now Optiv. So I was one of the first marketing folk, if you will, as we say in the Midwest, at Optiv. That kind of spurred on just a career and love of marketing in cyberspace. The more you're in it, the more you learn, and went to a few others. Now I find myself 15 years later at Praetorian. So, and I'm the product marketing director here, and it's just really exciting. I've found a career in building is what I like to do. If I referred to myself as like building the marketing function of these rapid growth startup mentality type cyber companies. And so, yeah.
You are a highly sought after warrior in the marketing department, my friend. Yeah. If you know how to build a thing from scratch. So yeah, kudos to you. What are some of the biggest challenges that the marketing department's facing right now?
I think the skill set within marketing has really changed over the last couple years, really. We've really seen it. And that is the use of AI and the use of automation tools. And so the skills that we once had have to now shift into how can we best use technology to increase our velocity, and how can we gain deeper insights into competitive intel and customer insights and all of these marketing things to craft the perfect message for our go-to-market strategy. It all comes down to technology is just ramping up so fast that we have to adopt that technology fast to be able to keep pace with the industry.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, the tools that were working don't seem to be working, especially like some of what I'm finding, the email sequencing tools that we could rely on to generate leads. We spend a lot of time building these campaigns, and then you wait for the sequences to play out and then you respond like, hey, here's a client meeting, boom. And now I feel like the messages are getting delivered, but none of them are getting opened. And I've tried Outreach and Apollo. Yeah. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, the rules are constantly changing on, filters and what can't be done, AI detection. I mean, the list goes on. So yeah, that's kind of back to the skill set thing. It's kind of the constant learning, constant adjustment. You got to almost be this agile approach to marketing now, because take, Google AdWords is a great example as well. The rules change. And so adapting of what keywords trigger certain responses and that kind of thing. It's constant.
We got to talk about wordsmithing too. But yeah, about like the email, deliverability stuff. Cause I signed up for Apollo and it's going through this checklist of things you got to figure out for your email domain. You have to go into your DNS records and set up stuff that you never even heard of, your CNAME, DMARC, whatever. And I'm like, man, I feel like I'm a systems administrator here.
Yeah.
Are there any like top secret things you've learned recently about how to increase your deliverability of emails?
You know, it's funny. Yesterday, I was talking to a CMO of another company, and we were talking similar about this, kind of in a nutshell, about the use of bots that companies are using as auto respondents. And it's giving us false positives. When we'll send out an email campaign, for example, we get these responses. And from a marketer standpoint, we're like, man, this is highly successful, but they're false positives. Oh, no. And so he was sharing some best practices for how to put hyperlinks in so that the bots respond to that. And it's kind of a dead page. So he could filter out true human interaction, like triggered by a mouse coming down to click on sign up for this newsletter or whatever the action may be versus a bot responding, to get less false positives, more real human interaction. So we have a real sense of what's, because that's a, going back to a challenge, that's really a challenge that we find is false positives and following that customer journey. Who's actually responding? Who's not? What's real? What's not? Another great example would be like an HTML email, a simple example, might get a response rate we've seen of, you know, 20%, something like that. You can change that message, simplify it. People are all about brevity these days. Simplify it to a plain text message, two sentences, high level. We recently did something like that, and we saw an 80% response rate. Now, that's an extreme example, but what I find fascinating from the product marketing side is you can take a very similar message with the exact same call to action in a lot of cases, but depending on how you deliver that message can greatly swing the response and conversion rates one way or the other.
Yeah, I've heard that there are some really popular podcasts out there that will A/B test over 200 different thumbnails,
yeah,
and pick the one that's getting clicked on the most. Yep. And so it separates them from the average Joe like me, just having a small fries podcast out here. Yep. If you've got a big budget, big team, and you can do stuff like that, that's who's getting all the views. It's kind of hard to compete with that too. And who has time for that?
That's exactly right. And I mean, this full circle conversation, really, because that's where I lean into things in AI. You know, that's where the AI comes in valuable to me, because here at Praetorian, we have an extremely small marketing team. So I'm doing multiple jobs. And how do I keep up with the big players and keep increasing my velocity? And the best practice is to A/B test. So we start at persona level. We, you know, we'll develop 2-3 messages from a technical buyer, a strategic buyer. You know, they all have different pains that we're speaking to. But beyond that, then we have to A/B test. We lean into various tools to kind of A/B test.
What are some of your favorite tools right now, and have you abandoned any recently that were kind of like your favorites, and how have they changed?
I've got a lot of various tools. You know what I've actually started doing, which I shouldn't share, this is my little secret.
I'll share it anyway.
No, I actually have been using like a platform like what we're using, like Vidyard, for having meetings with internal stakeholders. When we used to jump on like a Google Meets, I've been actually meeting in this. And reason being, then I can record our meetings, transcribe our meetings. It comes in separate files, and I can slice and dice for like social media, you know, different ways of doing things. Take just the audio, put it in like VIDIO or some similar app, have different social cards with some waveforms and just various ways to vary up the content. It's not seamless, but it is a good starting point to gather thoughts, collect thoughts, and then put your unique spin and differentiator on it. Use them for velocity. I keep using that term, but use them for velocity, but don't use them as final output.
There's a recruiting podcast I love called the Elite Recruiter Podcast. Ben Minna, he's doing an outstanding job. I think he's got over 150 pods now. He's a super nice guy. I mean, yeah, selfless and always helpful. But he turned me on to a tool that you might like. It's called Cast Magic, and it's for these scenarios where you have like a video file where you can throw it into Cast Magic, and it'll turn that into like summaries, descriptions. Mm. It'll turn it into an entire blog article for you.
Yeah.
And it's just like magically take your video content and turn it into things that you can use for marketing content. So yeah, you might want to check that out. Have you ever heard of Cast Magic before?
No, I haven't, but I will check that out. Yeah, that's exactly where it's at. That's exactly what we have to do as small teams. And there's more startups in this space. Another startup pops up every day. And so that's how you're going to have to ramp marketing up fast. And then I would say the caution kind of goes without saying probably, but you know, AI hallucinates. And so that's why you don't want to copy paste and boom, I'm done. Wrote a white paper. And that's what I find is most of the time it does. But you know, if it can get you 30% of the way there, at least, you know, or at 80, least you've got a, 80% yeah, yeah, right. you can at least structure the content and start putting your thought leadership on top of that and make something special.
Hey, you turn your internal meetings into marketing content. Not a bad idea. You're going to meet anyway.
That's you exactly right.
Might as well
right.
take the tiny nuggets that are marketable.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you know, it's kind of interesting. We're just starting it, but the authenticity of these kind of conversations, you know, marketing had the trend of being polished, and we still do a fair amount of polished content, get agencies to create videos and stuff. And those are all very useful as well. Not knocking them at all. But I think there's a good mix sometimes where just the authenticity of having a security engineer conversation for 30 minutes, there's just a wealth of information and knowledge that you gather just by chatting with those folks and then sharing that with your industry kind of sets you up as a thought leader in some ways that you don't always, we always protected from behind the scenes. And I think showing a little bit of that isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, people, I think they're going to like revolt against all the bots and the automation for real, genuine, raw content because yeah. It's going to be so hard to find it. Yeah. With all this AI generated stuff. So you've been focused on the product marketing side now since 2021, it looked like. And from my experience in recruiting, the first time I was even given a product marketing role to work on, it became very clear in short order that product marketing is like its own thing. It's much different from the other marketing roles. It's not generic marketing. It's like it's its own skill set. So can you explain that for us? Like, what's the difference between product marketing and how does that compare to the other roles that you'll typically find in like a more mature marketing department?
I mean, it says product marketing, but really it's looking at the entire company in my case. And how we are positioning our various solutions and offerings. What are those customers' needs and how can we speak to them? How do we position ourselves? And so that's really what it comes down to. And then optimizing to best tell that story. Product marketing is interesting because everyone has a bit of a different definition of it. In some sense, it's a jack of all trades. I think you have to know enough to be dangerous in the demand gen side, the digital side, the copywriting side. At the end of the day, it really comes down to understanding your customer, their problems, positioning your product as a differentiator, how you meet those problems and can assist them and really just tell that story. The other side of that is really internally sales enablement. And when you get to a larger organization, these are all split out separately. But in my case, it kind of all falls under product marketing, where I'm in lockstep with our sales team, provide the collateral they need, support these sales conversations. So it goes from website to sales calls to, you know, building the collateral to, you name it.
That's how it is. Whenever you have a smaller department, you have to wear many hats. Some of the bigger companies, they'll really segment it down where
they do.
Product marketing folks are, you know, it's like a niche thing. You get to be a more well-rounded player whenever you're at a smaller company, I guess, right?
That's exactly right. Now, if you're talking, I've been part of larger organizations such as, you know, Coalfire and Optiv early on. Product marketing there was a lot different than here in the way of we were hyper-focused on customer segmentation, building like our competitive analysis, competitive intel, crafting specific messages based on the competitive intel, building the kind of the value house messaging per offering, and really got to dive in much, much deeper.
Kind of varies company by company, I think.
Have you found ways to personalize your messages? Because I feel like that's the way to get responses now. Everything has to be hyper personalized. And then you use kind of AI to help you do that using tools like Clay. I tried to look into Clay. Clay, it's the whole thing's just over my head. You got to be like a VBA developer to use Clay. But yeah, have you found any successful ways to personalize your outreach?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the very highest level, we build personas. The overly simplified version is you've got your strategic buyers and you've got your technical buyers and you've got your end users. So, you know, the strategic buyers, the C-suite, the VPs, they have their own set of concerns of moving the business forward in a strategic direction. Whereas the technical buyers, they're the rubber hits the road. They're wanting to know, like in cybersecurity case, you know, they're inundated with noise and alerts and how can they stop chasing false positives all day, those type of things. And what's our tool going to do for them? We approach the message that way, just knowing what their concerns are. Then we can segment out by, for example, industry vertical. C-suite of a healthcare organization is going to have much different needs than a C-suite of a manufacturing company. And so healthcare may be highly focused on compliance at the moment, whereas manufacturing, it may be a CI/CD pipeline or, you know, supply chain pipeline. There's thousands of ways to slice and dice it. But really what it comes down to is focusing on the customer need, the problem they have, their pain points, and speaking to that.
And that's got to be hard because there are so many cyber companies out there. You know, more startups, EDR, MDR, the offensive security side that Praetorian's playing in, pen testing services. What is the differentiator for Praetorian? Yeah.
Praetorian is an exciting company. You've heard the saying, it's not a matter of if you're going to be breached, but when. And, you know, we don't necessarily agree to that. Praetorian is an offensive security company that really helps companies focus from moving from more of a reactive state, a defensive reactive mentality, to more of a proactive, like prevent breach approach or mentality, if you will. We do that by, we say we bring the hacker's perspective in every engagement. So that includes our creativity. What are the latest TTPs that hackers are using? And we really try to find those exploitable risks within an organization and remediate those before they have a chance to be exploited. So we have a suite of professional services, red team and attack path mapping and penetration testing. And we do all that. But then what we've done with our platform, Chariot, we've tried to simplify security. When we looked at it, organizations build entire tech stacks to really achieve two things, and that's to discover assets and to identify risks. But they're going out piecemealing these solutions to put a tech stack together. And what happens is they're siloed. They're not talking to each other. They don't have the context that's needed. So what we've done with our Chariot platform is we've combined attack surface management and breach and attack simulation, continuous pen testing, threat intel, all kind of into one unified solution that works seamlessly with each other. And we call it CTIM, which is kind of a new Gartner term that people are moving to, which is continuous threat exposure management. And so this platform just allows us to enable that entire process. CTIM is an interesting thing to be watching in the security space because traditional vulnerability management, you schedule your pen test, you schedule your one-off engagements or your scans or whatever. And what's happening is the threat landscape in just today's remote work environment, it has to be continuous. A threat can pop up and live within an environment until that next scan or that next pen test or whatever it may be. And so this CTIM, continuous threat exposure management, is a continuous monitoring of your entire attack surface. And I think you're going to start seeing a lot more folks move that direction. It's not necessarily recognized as a category yet. It's more of a methodology than a true solution. It combines the people, process, and technology to create this holistic play, which is different than piecemealing point solutions that don't necessarily speak to each other, and they don't have that context to identify that true exploitable risk.
That's the name of the game. Now, you're the first person I've ever heard say that term, CTEM, Continuous Threat Exposure Management. So that means Praetorian's on the cutting edge right there. I mean, when I saw the name of the company, I'm like, oh man, I really want to do business with them, right? I want to be a recruiting partner for them because it is like it's a Star Wars-y name, you know, the Praetorian Guard in Star Wars. Yep. So I was like, oh man, it's meant to be. I'm an outsider, but a fan of the company.
The name drew me as well. And to be honest, I'm like, this is a cool name. I can market this, right?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking the whole time, because I followed this other podcast from Daniel Meisler. It's called Unsupervised Learning. And he's all about, you know, the latest in AI. And he had this awesome video called AI's Predictable Path. And in the future, everyone's supposed to have an AI daemon, like an API basically, that can act on their behalf. And it has a ton of data about each individual, and it can basically go on meetings and interact with any other company's API on your behalf. It can like recommend things to you or protect you from things. So as you were saying, the CTM tool, I feel like each individual may need one of those one day.
Yeah.
Running in addition to their AI bot, their personal bot. That's just my mind was.
Yeah.
You'll have to check out that video. It's super interesting. Yeah. So how do you feel like AI is going to impact the marketing department, you know, over the next 3 to 5 years?
I think AI it's obviously impacting everything. You know, it's impacting everything from what we see security. We have an entire team dedicated to AI research and vulnerability research because we think it's that important. It increases the velocity. That seems to be the theme of today. But from a marketing standpoint, it increases it in a positive manner. From a cybersecurity standpoint, sometimes it increases it from not such a positive manner. It allows hackers the ability to quickly spin up attacks, increase that tenfold, and new techniques, getting more and more creative. We see deep fakes. It's a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways. You know, it collects our information to a point that's just scary. We're training it from our own knowledge, which has huge benefits. And at the same time, being so unregulated at the moment is really scary from a cybersecurity standpoint. So while I use it, I guess it's part of consumerism. I'm like, I can't help myself. You know, it's helping me do my job. And at the same time, being in the unique position of being in cybersecurity that I am, I'm like, okay, you got to put those stop gaps in place to make sure that we use it responsibly.
We'll see where it goes. I'm afraid of what's going to happen too. I wish we would just stop right now, just stop where we're ahead.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we can talk about, but I am curious kind of how you decide how to spend your time in the marketing department. I'm trying to decide how to spend my time too. Do I make cold calls? Do I make a video? Do I leave LinkedIn audio messages? Do I create a infographic? So in a typical work week, what are all the types of content that you're trying to put out there?
That's the $1 million question, I think, you know, we all struggle with it no matter how much we have it together or not. When it comes to crafting a message, you have to stay focused on providing value, or you know what their pain points are and how can you provide value to that and speak directly and fill that need and that gap. That's always in the back of my head, no matter what I'm crafting. I also stay focused on target audience. Who's our target audience? I don't want to go wide with this because we will work ourselves to death to just gather. And at the end of the day, some of that gathering can cost more money than it's worth. So we have a very focused ICP, ideal customer profile. And that is who we are hyper-focused on with a very specific message. And so all of our efforts go into that. Most of my efforts go into first building content that is value add, not heavy pitch at all, but I would rather it be 90% value add content of here's attack paths we're seeing in your industry. Here's how we have seen we can combat these, you know, those type of messages, provide them a white paper, an ebook, a blog, or whatever it is.
and then maybe 10%. And oh, by the way, if you need help, we're here and we're really good at it too. I think you get more response being a partner than a salesperson. Just really being someone that truly cares about the problem. And I should say from a sales perspective, I think that's what our sales team does as well, is we're actually truly concerned with securing environments versus just selling widgets to them. And I think people are relational. They know, you know, they know when you're trying to actually add value and care about the quality of the service. You know, at Praetorian, that's something that we're really proud of. We watch daily our NPS, and we're very proud. We have a lifetime net promoter score of 92, and we don't churn clients. Like we take it very serious, and that is because we want to add value to every engagement. So we take that across the board, be it engineering, be it marketing. How can we do that and not just put out marketing ads?
Yeah. A net promoter score of 92. Can you explain how you come up with the score?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of methodologies. But basically, at the end of engagements, there's a survey that goes out. We get feedback after every engagement. It basically measures the likelihood that someone would not only use you again, but recommend you.
Okay.
You know,
I'm taking those.
Yeah, exactly. We don't really get too many negatives. I mean, every once in a while, something will come through for one reason or another, and we want to address that because we want 100. We take anything less than a 10 very serious. We like to tout white glove service. So net promoter score is very serious to us, and I think it should be to every organization, you know? I mean, that's why we're in business. Making money comes off of doing good work.
Yeah, it sounds like something that even the recruiting community could benefit from after every engagement. Like, hey, take this quick survey. Would you recommend me after our call or after this process we just went through? Because I haven't done that.
From a product marketing side, it also gives a lot of good insight into what customers are thinking. While we love to hear the praise, I take it all in, what was important to them. And we can continually iterate and craft our message based on that.
That's a great idea. Right. And I've heard that term net promoter score a lot. I just never cared to like really dive into what it meant. Okay. So as far as like using data to determine kind of what you do, because there's so many things that you could be doing, and net promoter score is one of those data points. As far as like the marketing channels that you're using, what's working the best right now? Like what channel?
Going back to the hyper-focused nature of our business, because things like AdWords and running marketing campaigns, they're expensive, and we don't have unlimited budget. No company does, right? So we actually have been leaning heavily into Sixth Sense for buyer intent. And this is kind of where market has changed over the last 5 years or so. You know, 5 years ago, when you talked about buyer intent signals, it was very immature. You know, somebody's searching for a product and we can see that. Now we use tools like Sixth Sense and Zoom Info, and there's a few of them out there that we can now trigger buyer intent signals based on our ICP out of this group that we're really wanting to target. Who is searching for the solution we have, say attack surface management, for example? And then we can also see the search, their activity, their behavior online, what they're searching for. Have they visited our site? And then we've written an algorithm to basically determine who's in the later stages of that buying cycle, who's really starting to educate and come to a decision. And those are the later stage of the funnel, if you will, who we're targeting, because we don't have unlimited money to just spray out there hoping we catch a fish, if you will. We want to give a direct message to those that are actually looking and spend our dollars there that, hey, we have a solution for this. That's really where we're leaning into the technology and some of our own algorithms that we've written.
I've never run an ad before.
It's a deep, dark hole.
Yeah. So far, I've only done the social media marketing, you know, the LinkedIn type stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's completely dead. It just depends. You never really know what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah. It's constant iteration.
Everything's a tiny little experiment.
It is. Actually, that's funny you say that. That's exactly how we're referring to it right now, because we're just getting our marketing efforts off the ground, and it's rapid experiments. You succeed, fail, adjust, move on. It's right. Kind of like when we're approaching it, we're a company of engineers. We're approaching this marketing experiments just as we would like application development, you know, sprints, if you will. And you learn, you adjust, you move on.
There's probably no other way right now
to
do it. If you're not willing to adjust and change and be agile in this market, then good luck. You're going to get left behind. In terms of just the email stuff, I guess how much time do you spend wordsmithing emails?
Probably not enough.
Okay.
I think that's almost a luxury. We have timelines for how we need campaigns to go out, and we kind of build a roadmap of our campaigns. Being a smaller team, we don't have that much time to wordsmith. As we mature as a marketing org, that time should increase, because I think there is an importance of specific messaging and making sure that aligns to the buyer pain and really being clear. Sometimes as marketers, we're creative and we can come up with really cool taglines and that kind of stuff. But if you read it, you're like, what was I saying? Like, surely the reader doesn't have a clue what I was. It was very catchy, but it doesn't say what we do, you know? And so we've kind of taken that approach of just being very clear and direct in our message. It's not overly creative marketing, but it says what we do and how we do it.
And you brought up an interesting point about moving away from the fancy HTML-based emails that have pictures and things move. Because I think people are so numb to those now. If it looks like a marketing campaign, delete. Yeah. Unsubscribe immediately.
Yeah.
You know, report junk.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is. If it just look, even if it would be the perfect product for them, as soon as it looks like it's a marketing campaign, it's going into junk. So the more that you can look like a personal email and almost like a text message style email, right? The shorter, the better, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree with you more. The simple language. 5 years ago, we as marketers, I could tell you personally, just like self-conscious about showing my knowledge and like I can be a security guy too. It turned into rambling emails. If I read that back as the consumer, I could care less how smart you sound. I just want to know, you know, like it went into the spam or the trash, right? Now it's all about tell what you do, tell how you fix my pain points, and do we need to have a conversation? That's it.
It is hard though whenever you're writing some type of campaign, like they say, you're supposed to focus on the problem.
Yeah.
What is the problem? Spend all your time talking about that. And then whatever the value you can add, and then the call to action at the end or whatnot. It is hard to do that. It's hard to do that in recruiting. I know. Cause it's like the problem is right now, you're not able to fill this job. That's not a problem right now. There's so many candidates on the market.
Yeah.
Especially in tech. So all the marketing that used to work in recruiting isn't working right now. And everybody's trying to figure out, is it me? Is it something I said? Is my email domain burned? Am I going to spam? It makes you wonder, is it just there's no demand because people aren't having trouble filling jobs right now? Because there's so many on the market.
Yeah. You're in a tough spot. You know, what I've been telling our sales team, and I'm building out these nurture drip campaigns and whatnot, and every email that I craft or sales team to reach out, I'm telling them also attach something of value to it. You know, something that where it's not just a sales, hey, can I have a sales meeting, but it's indirectly asking for that, but it's also providing something of value that you'd find interesting, be it a blog post, a white paper, a link to a webinar, maybe something that you found online that you think could be specific for helping that organization. So I think that's key, is always providing value as well. I think that's one thing. I guess I have a question for you, if that's okay.
Sure. There is a segment where...
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Ask a recruiter anything. I'm here. Fire away. What kind of questions do you have for a recruiter?
Oh my goodness. So how is AI playing in the recruiting process with... I mean, I feel like it has changed the game in terms of you have so many applicants now. And I know AI is looking for keywords and this and that. And I've seen, because I go manually through some of our applicants, and I see sometimes I feel like we've lost some good applicants maybe that got filtered out that I had to manually put back in because of AI. Do you see that being a problem, or how do you get past that?
It is. And I've complained about it for a long time because the filtering, how they rank the relevancy score on resumes, they're trying to use something called semantic searches, where it'll take words that are kind of like the word you're looking for and include that in the relevancy score. But it's not what I want, right? When I'm looking for a word, I just want that word. Don't get creative. Don't think you're smarter than me. Rank the person based on these five words. If they have all five, rank them 100%. They have 4 out of 5, 80%. So it just gets to the point where the systems are doing more harm than good in some cases. I have yet to find a recruiting software that just is accurate 100% all the time, even with the parsing. Like a resume parsing is also a big deal, because there's so many different templates out there and people love to get creative now with their resumes and use Canva. And the software is trying to find, okay, what's your job title and where are you located and what company did you work at recently? And
that's
and
right.
It's trying to pick out these things and put them into a grid view.
Yeah.
So that whenever you first are looking at all the applicants, you can see this overview of all the people coming in, because you don't want to sit there and just look at each individual resume.
Right.
You want to see the information that if you did click on the resume, what would you be looking for right off top? Right.
Yeah.
And it's trying to parse that. Well, the more creative you get with your resume, the harder job it's going to be for it to get that right. So the wrong information is going to populate into the grid view field, and then you're going to get rejected. So use a boring resume. And I kind of wish the software would dumb itself down to where it's not trying to use semantic anything.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I mean, I use the word context, and that's something we speak a lot at Praetorian. And I'm bringing it back to security for a second. I think while we live in different worlds, we have a similar problem. In cybersecurity, folks are looking at their assets and their vulnerabilities, and they have a risk score. And however they determine their risk score, and then they prioritize. These are high, medium, low, and that's how they prioritize what vulnerabilities they patch and fix. But without context, and that's kind of Praetorian's message, without that human element of saying, that's not really high because this matches this, this, and this, or you're using this in your business in this specific way, these are what is your true exploitable risks in your business, and we focus on those. It's kind of similar. I know I'm probably drawing a very wide parallel here, but in the same sense, I feel like recruiting, it is, you have all these applicants that may meet your need, but without that context, the AI is just pushing them to the side where you don't really see maybe highly qualified folks.
Yeah. And I feel like what's going to happen is bigger companies are going to adopt these AI interviewing bots where if you apply, if your resume scores 80% relevancy, it's going to invite you to interview with the AI bot, and it's going to sound great. And maybe like Scarlett Johansson or something like that. It's going to be nice to you. It's going to give you compliments. It's going to give you feedback. But I wonder, though, because I have tested a couple of tools, I've just found that there's low participation from the candidates to actually take the interview. They're getting invited, but they're like, oh, this is an AI interview? Nah. Yeah. Because it's the same thing with customer service calls, right? You call customer service and you got to go through the phone tree prompt. And, you know, what are you trying to do? Press 0000 and get to a person as fast as you can. So I wonder if the candidate marketplace will be resistant to the AI screening bots because they just want to talk to a person, right?
That's a good point. It's a reflection on the company culture. It could be possibly. And it's also like, especially in my world of technology, I know I call myself the least technical person at the company, but even I know basics of how to hack some of these prompts of AI to possibly move on. So how much can you hack technology to move on in the process where some of the candidates don't know how to do that, but they may be more qualified, you know? So it's turned into a bit more of a game where those savvy in technology can win sometimes. That's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, we were joking the other day because especially in the software development community, when you look at the resumes that apply, they're just oceans of keywords that are highlighted. It's just keyword city, bullet point city, and they're just trying to trigger the relevancy score to say, ding, 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 this person's a fit. Well, yeah. You could apply that to the AI interview, because it's not really listening to you. It's just taking a transcript of your words and then grading you based on the words that it detected that you said. So if you're wanting a product marketing job, you just say product marketing, A/B testing, product marketing. Just say it over and over, you know, say all the relevant keywords over and over again to fool it, right?
That's exactly right. Terrible that we're talking about this, but it's true. Recruiting to me is a fascinating kind of field, really, because the job market is what it is. Like, I know so many folks looking for jobs right now. It's just flooded. You're lucky if you have a job. I don't take that lightly in any way. And so, yeah, I don't know. Do you have any tips that help candidates stand out?
Yeah, use boring resumes. Make sure you put your title and skill set right below your name, right up top. And don't withhold where you're located, because oftentimes roles are location-based now. There's return to office. Everything's hybrid on-site now. So it does matter where you're located. Yeah, there's a lot of hacks on resumes as far as like calling out the tools and technologies that you use in each job. Don't just list them all in this inventory section at the bottom of your profile. If you're trying to be a fit for a job, don't rely on that bullet point that you put 5 jobs ago on page 3 that you're claiming makes you a fit for this role. No, all that has to be in the first half of the page to get the audience's attention, just to spend more than 3 seconds looking at it. And you may not even get that, because first you have to get past the grid view. Use the boring resume so that the right items can get populated into the grid view, parsed in correctly. That'll probably get you 80% there. The rest, you know, you got to interview well and all that good stuff, but all that's out the window if your resume is preventing you from landing an interview. It's really hard right now because you post a job and you have 500 applicants within a couple of days. So, and there's a lot of ghost jobs too. A lot of jobs that are out there. They're not even real.
Yeah. What's the deal with that? Why do I don't understand that?
Well, there's already duplicate jobs, because if, let's say, you have a company that's working with maybe a handful of recruiting agencies, well, you're going to get the company's posting, and then that posting is going to be distributed to multiple job boards. Well, then the recruiting agencies are also going to post that same job, and they have job board distribution technologies as well, where so that same job could be advertised 30 to 40 different places. So not counting that, though, I'm talking about the jobs that are posted on LinkedIn directly at a company where they have all these jobs posted, but they're actually on a hiring freeze. They're just not telling anybody.
Yeah. And they're just wanting to collect information right now.
Yeah. Pipeline and resumes for future hires. Optics, just making it seem like they're in good shape because, hey, we're hiring, but actually we're not.
Yeah.
But it looks like we are.
I've also seen companies that may be on a freeze or something, but they want to go ahead with the interview process. Do you run into that where then they just draw out the interview process for 3 and 4 and 5 months to the point it's unfair to the candidate who's needing a job emotionally, getting their hopes up, you know, at some point, and they just keep adding to the process just to drag it out until the freeze lifts. Is that anything you run into?
Yeah, I've seen that. The worst is whenever they interview because they're not super confident that the person that they could promote is ready.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, we better hire externally. And then after they kiss a lot of frogs and waste a lot of people's time, they just decide to go ahead and promote that internal employee. And good for them, right? But they should just give people a shot sooner than to just go through this whole like A/B testing of candidates, pretty much. I mean, they're like, we're going to test the market, see who's out there. There's really no urgency to hire, right? Because the person may even be doing the job right now as like, maybe they're not the manager. Maybe they're the lead.
Yeah.
And they're doing, they're functionally doing the job. So yeah, I hate that for people because it does waste a lot of people's time.
What about LinkedIn? I've heard different rules. I don't know what's the standard. At one point it was like, oh, don't add a lot to each job description. Other people say, oh, add every detail to every job that you've had. Do you have any advice? I know LinkedIn is obviously a massive recruiting tool. What triggers LinkedIn? Any best practice advice there?
Yeah, LinkedIn's the most important place to be if you're looking for a job. You need to use every single feature that LinkedIn has to your advantage. And yeah, I would put all the content that's in your resume in your LinkedIn, because all that stuff's searchable.
Yeah. And so almost make it your resume in some sense. It's just as important in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I would almost argue that it makes more sense just to keep your LinkedIn profile updated. And then download your resume from LinkedIn when it comes time to look for a job.
Yeah, that's a good point. The last 2, 3, 4 companies I've been with, we're looking for a candidate, we're going to go to LinkedIn. Or if a candidate applies, the first place I click as a hiring manager, there's a button for LinkedIn, hyperlink, boop, I see their LinkedIn. Always check it out. First and that goes with all social. I guess my advice as a non-recruiter, though, is be careful of all social channels. I mean, I've had some unique instances where I'm like, oh gosh, I'm not sure I want the activities associated with this company. You know, like everything's online, you know, we'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if things I'm putting out there are doing me favors or, you know, hurting me a little bit, but all you can do is be yourself. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's right.
You either got to deal with the pain of faking it or deal with the pain of being yourself and getting ridiculed from
it's
it.
It's a good way to be. That's a good way to be.
Well, hey, man, it's been fun talking to you, and I hope we can
you too.
Do it again. I can't wait to put this out, and I feel like a lot of people are going to get value from it, especially other people in the marketing space and maybe other folks that have recruiting questions and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, let me know how I can help, and it's been fun.
You just let me know whenever Petroria needs to hire in the marketing department. I'll be there for you, man.
I definitely will. Yeah, we are. It's myself and one other right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's me, and I have a counterpart that is demand gen. That is it. One of our core values is 10X, not 10%, meaning we need to do 10 times the work to stay ahead. A lot of companies hire out over their skis, and then I think that's partly why we see layoffs sometimes. And I really appreciate Praetorian is the exact opposite, where we are very conservative, and we all, from every side of the organization, work so hard, every person. But we're thankful to have a job. We're conservative in that way. We don't want to have to lay people off.
I mean, I respect them for that, having that mentality. I wish you guys all the success in the world over there. Let me know how I can help. Yeah, I'm a fan of the company, and thanks for coming on. It's been a fun conversation.
Yeah, same to you.